The enemy is upon us. It's time to dig in, to stand our ground, and watch for the next attack. You're in the Foxhole with Jason Mark.
Hey, welcome back to the Foxhole, where we stand our ground and watch for the enemy's next move. This evening is the 22nd of March, Friday, 2024, and today we are going to be talking about the destabilization and fracturing of America. I have with me to talk about this Mr. Jonathan M. Mr. Jonathan M., tell us about yourself. You're also a fellow podcaster, so you can let us know where people can watch you and what you kind of cover.
How you doing tonight, Jason? Yeah, some people know me as Jonathan from Jersey because I'm back up in Jersey. There's my logo. Currently have a program on freeworld.fm, Perceptions Talk Radio. Picked it up from the past. I did it a couple years back. I've been around a lot of conspiracy circles. They call it conspiracies because while you're fact-finding, people are unmercilessly, you know, challenging you and everything. They want hard facts, hard facts, hard facts. And I get it. And so, unfortunately... The truth of the matter is conspiracy is not a bad word. It's an actual word to describe the situation of the underhanded tactics that are being used against us, including propaganda and everything that's made legal under Obama. I think he did away with that law in 2008. And so I'm constantly searching the truth. That's what I do. I'm open to other people's ideas because somewhere in between my position and their position is the truth. More importantly, if we're living in the same country, I'd like to get back to us all being Americans and you know, we could stay divided all we want on our issues, whether it's political, ideological, religious, you know, whatever. Okay. That was the greatness of America. One time you come here and you'd be free to think as you will and live as you will, but there was supposed to be a modicum of respect, decorum, and a sense of camaraderie. And even, you know, if you want to call that patriotism, you know, supporting one another in this country and everything it stands for. So that's where I'm at right now in 2024.
I amen to that. I just want to have people think about back during the days when we had victory gardens to support the war. The women went to work. We bought American products to support each other and to build the nation. And we're so far from that now. And as far as the conspiracy stuff, some of the stuff we're talking about tonight, people are going to say, yeah, that's a conspiracy. I'm just going to show you what's been going on and what the military has done in the past and let you make up your own mind. Just keep in mind, UFOs were a conspiracy theory until they admitted to it. So one of two things is true. Either the government, well, either the UFOs are real or they're not real, but either way, the government has lied to us at one point about it. So think about that. You know, lied to us for 50 years or they're lying to us now. I don't know. But anyway, back to the topic. So we're going to talk about the fraction of America, and I really... I've been thinking about, you know, why do people run these destabilization operations? We've done it around the world, right? It always precedes either a regime change or a war, you know, or to sway maybe a current war. But it's either regime change in which they're going to install democracy or whatever form of government we want for America's best interest, so they say, not our best interest, but the politician's best interest, military industrial complex best interest, or it's has something to do with war. What do you think about that?
I'm looking at it like a long-term game in terms of strategy. These guys, you know, they have think tanks and they know there's going to be a change of power with that. They know there's going to be a change of population with that. They know there's going to be a change of technology. So they're looking at the social fabric of how we interact with each other, what we do, what our moral values and everything else is. That said, there's so many ways we could approach this. Like we were saying right before the show, we were talking about a great many things. I personally believe the big secret, if you want to say the elite and the secrets that they're keeping and all that, is bigger than UFOs even. Is, like I said, the true cosmology of this planet, where we are, okay? Because if you know the parameters of this place, and I'm not going to get funny with it, I'm saying if we know exactly where we are, what our resources are, and if they know that there's certain event horizons, certain ELEs or things possibly happening, whether it's a passing planet like they talk about, like Nibiru, if they've done laboratory tests and they found that, you know, like rats in a cage, after a certain population level, certain diseases might get out of control, whatever they've figured out, right? They're responsible not for 200 million people, like in times of Christ, or a billion people in 1900. It's now up to 8 point something billion. Okay. I'm not justifying what they're doing. I'm saying that from their standpoint, it's similar to that saying, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Mm-hmm.
They have a certain mindset and they have a certain drive, and they have to leave emotions aside. They've made a determination that they're going this way, whatever this way is, right? They have a planning, like this agenda 2030 and so on and so forth. So I'm not one to say that when they say people make fun of military intelligence or the government's stupid and all these people are making mistakes. No, they're right on track. They're waiting to see what we do. I think this COVID thing that we just had, that we just went through, that was more of a psychological operation and a test, right? Under Event 201, there was some pre-planning. I don't want to get into that. I want to talk about that later. But what I'm saying is, I think it was a psychological test to see where people were at, what they would put up with, because I mean, it was, 6 feet apart and masks that don't work and all this other stuff, right? They told us 2 weeks. They wanted to see what our resistance level was and how angry it would be. And, what I'm saying, to see how it would react for what's coming next. I sometimes find that even with Trump, it's what scares me about, like, with Trump getting in, everybody wearing a red hat, all the patriots that stepped up, conservatives and so on and so forth. A lot of these people were never really outspoken, right? They were happy with their families, their work, good values, and, their neighbors and their friends and their family. But as soon as they started wearing red hats and waving the flag and all that, I felt like, you know what? The government's taking a metric. It's taking a poll. Okay, you're a resistor because you're a patriot. You're a conservative. You know what I mean? Like, they started taking, now they were able to see and identify people who would be the problem, coming up in 2024, 28, and so on. So ask the original question again, because I didn't mean to get long and convoluted on this.
Oh, the question is what you think about the destabilization efforts, and we kind of went right from there.
If you go far, you could start with the Fed in 1913 getting off the gold standard and everything else, and then again under Nixon and all that. I feel like, they already knew where money was going. They already knew that it was a fiat currency. They implemented derivatives. They, all these bubbles that we've created that people like Peter Schiff said we should have deflated in 2008. Even Alan Greenspan, former Treasury, said, we should have let these things deflate. We shouldn't have had ninja loans. There's a lot of shit we shouldn't have done, but they did it anyway. So basically what we've seen in the past 8 years, this is my position. It's been a wealth extraction from the middle class, hollowing it out, moving over to digital currency so that there's no way for people to trade or do business and everything without it being all, marked and watched and monitored and controlled, right? They turn your account off. You can't do anything. So this destabilization, it's a long-term plan. And like we were saying right before the show, the narrative has always been China always took the long-term 100-year, plan. No, we've done it too. They've been doing it to us.
We're going
to
get into that. We are.
And so, so they've been stepping us into this, the whole problem reaction solution and predictive programming and anything like that. They've been, grooming us, and they've been giving us all these incredible things to keep us distracted, social media and our, modern day bread and circuses and everything like that. So, destabilization comes in all different forms. It could be a simple coup in a country, whatever, throw over the government and plan in whoever we want. It could be like John Perkins, we were talking about, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and they can go in and destabilize it with the CIA or some other, operation working in conjunction with the IMF. They can do drug trade like Air America with Barry Seal. I mean, there's a million ways to destabilize. And at the same time, it's funny, not funny, haha, ironic funny, that they're all in cahoots and playing this like one big effing game,
Well, let me hop in there real quick. So you were talking about, the globalists. I'll just call them globalists because they call themselves globalists, right? Globalists like Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, Soros. They know something we don't know, and maybe population is the problem, and the ends justify the means for the things they do. Or they think it does anyway. And they're working for organizations like Davos, World Economic Forum, Bank of International Settlements, the UN. And when I talked about America doing these destabilizations and regime changes across the globe for our interests abroad, that's not interest that serve the people's interest. That's interest that serves the globalist interest, right? And our CIA is the executing hand of that, and then all the other three letters kind of their tools for the CIA to use. And I want to read from this article here just so people don't think I'm too crazy. I want to, before we talk about what's happening here, and you just touched on a lot of things that I got some more info on, a lot of their techniques for destabilization, but we've done this, and this is an article from the CIA, not from the CIA, it's an article written about the CIA, but I don't remember if you've heard of it. I'm sure you have. You know your.
Should I get out of full screen? Are you going to post
it? Yeah, I'll go put it up. I'm just going to read a little bit of it.
I see it.
As a recent CIA director, Mike Pompeo, we all know who he is. He said that his time in the CIA, I was the CIA director. We lied. We cheated. We stole. We had entire training courses. The CIA was established in 1947 as a successor to the Office of Strategic Service, the OSS. They had performed two distinct roles in World War II, intelligence and subversion. Now, those are the old school terms that we used, right? Now it's destabilization, regime change, all this other stuff. So the CIA took over both roles. I'm just going to skip down. Oh, here it is. The CIA was to subvert the enemy, which I believe is us now. That is whoever the president or the CIA defined as the enemy, using a wide range of measures, assassinations, coups, staged unrest, arming of insurgents and other means. And then down here, this last snippet, in effect, the CIA is a secret army of the U.S. capable of creating mayhem across the world with no accountability whatsoever. Now replace the world, word world with the United States. And does it seem like what's going on right now? In the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, you know,
very much.
Yeah. So let me go on now and we'll define, I actually pulled up the definition of destabilization. I forget. It's not Webster's. This is another accredited dictionary. The action of making a government area or political group lose power or control. That political group would be us, the people, right? Because we are supposed to be in charge of this country, supposed to be. Okay. Or making a political or economic situation less strong or safe by causing changes and problems. Boom, problems. And that's what we're seeing right now is problems in a variety of areas. And then they want us to beg for a solution or they'll come up with it. Look at COVID. COVID was a problem. They already had the solution. Okay. And like you said, myself and my co-hosts that host with me all the time, they also agree. They think it was a test to see how far they could take us. And it's also kind of like boiling the frog slowly into water. Mm-hmm. If let's just say that we only stood for 2 weeks of lockdown. Okay. It kind of normalized it at that point. Okay. 2 weeks. Okay. You're allowed out of your cage right now. Okay. You're allowed to go back to the restaurants, go back to work. But then the next time they bring that idea up, it's not such a weird idea. You know what I'm saying? So they've kind of like got us used to or groomed us for it. So, anyway, let's go into, go ahead.
Let me just say one thing today. What I was going to say is really sad about that is, again, I'm compassionate to people that don't know the things that we know at our course of, you know, like we were just talking about telecommunications or military or any kind of background from a technical standpoint. But yet, even touching them with kid gloves and trying to explain to them certain things during the COVID experience, like, I just want to show you something. And I show them the back of a package of these N95 masks they're wearing, and it says does not protect against, you know, I said, let me tell you something. It's not funny. I was like, if I fart and you can smell it, that was in my butt. It's up your nostrils.
Yeah.
Those particles are bigger than the small microns of spike proteins of COVID. And they don't get it at first. It's like, what I'm trying to tell you is if these bigger particles can get through your mask of filtration and you can smell it, then you can't smell the COVID. That's much smaller. So these are not effectual things, you know, and I'm trying to explain, like, you know, just to be silly a little bit, because if you're too serious and you're too, you know, direct at them,
right,
they you know, they put up the defense and then they start going down that you're a conspiracy guy, you're nuts and this and that. I try to meet them where they're at. And I try to, but you just see this fear that came over everybody. I just have to say this one thing. The saddest thing I saw during COVID, as it was winding down, so many months in, it was about a year in, this old couple sitting at a park, and I'm down in Florida, and Florida didn't have a lot of masks because a lot of people are outdoors distancing anyway because they're on the beach. You know, we're not in close.
Like I was down in Georgia during that time, so like really close to Florida, like an hour from the border.
So winter conditions, of course, you're indoors and you're going to have, you know, you want to be, yeah, of course, you should always wash your hands anyway, right? People don't even do that now. But this old couple, they had to be about like 80, 90 years old, sitting on a park bench away from each other with masks on and everything. And I'm thinking, like, really? Like, you sleep in the same bed or you drove there in the same car and, like,
right.
You know, like, is this because you're afraid that somebody's going to point at you and say, where's your mask? Where's your, like, this is my wife. Like, I've known her for, since the 1920s. I'm going to die with her. I'm sorry. It just, that pisses me off.
You know, you're right, though, about kind of like making it goofy or, you know, coming off real light, you got to give them a little spoonful and then make them come back and ask you questions. One of the things I would like to be asking people during COVID, I would say, you know, so we got sent home. Now I was still going to work every other day or so because we had a project going on in the Army and I had to go take care of it. We had a timeline on it. They just reduced how many people we had to wear masks, all that silly stuff. But people were at home, hadn't gone anywhere for weeks. And then they would test positive for COVID. And I'm like, well, where did you catch the COVID? Isn't that a fair question? I talked to my mom the other day and I wish I had the article up. So now they're talking about deer. COVID is passing from people to deer. It's mutating in the deer and the deer are passing it back to people. And this is going to give us variants. And I'm going to talk about this tomorrow on our Knights of the Storm show. But she asked me a simple question. She's like, how many people do you know that can get 6 feet within, you know, 6 feet of a wild deer? Mm. You can't. I mean, you gotta, when you go deer hunting, you gotta hide yourself. You gotta wash everything off you, descent yourself. Don't make any noise whatsoever. It's crazy to think that these deer are catching it from people and then passing it back to people.
There's one important point that we have to put to this, which nobody really addresses enough. And my understanding is that they've never really isolated the COVID-19.
Right.
You know, so we don't even have it. What we could have experienced was just an advanced flu paired with some kind of, I don't want to, you know, name anybody specific, but the same people that have sprayed over our skies and done testing in the New York City subways to see the spread radius of certain diseases. I mean, these are all actual programs that happened out of Fort Detrick or whatever, you know, those viral programs and stuff. And, you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, they didn't call it flu, but it was very much matched every flu symptom we had, just a very exotic or, you know, more robust. And then the problem is, like, was it exacerbated by some of the vaccines? Were some of the vaccines inert so you could have control groups? They knew which vials were hot so they could see the spread radius, shedding, you know, all these different things that we don't know what they were actually testing during that period. They had a 2-year period to test a lot of things. You know what I'm saying? But we don't really know what COVID is. So it's like a boogeyman virus. It's not like something that you see that's exotic or that's actual in Africa, right? When people, you know, get sick with certain diseases, right? So people are still under the illusion or delusion that COVID is real. Again, now when you say it that way, you sound like a freaking conspiracy person. Well, look, what do you mean it's not real? My aunt died of COVID. How dare you?
Well, do you remember the flesh eating, the Ebola? The Ebola that was going
necrotic?
Around?
It was necrotic. Was it actual? I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they actually had microscopic images of it.
Okay.
Everything we see now when they talk about this COVID stuff is a computer generated image.
Right. Right.
Everything. And just, you know who Matt Landman is?
Yes.
We had Matt Landman on a few weeks ago and, we talked about the chemtrails and some other things. And we went through actual cases that you're talking about that, we now know that they were spraying stuff and it was making people sick. We know that. And we see stuff being sprayed in the sky. Some people call it contrails. Some people think it's, I know that there's chemtrails because I found documentation.
Right.
I think it was Matt. It might've been Matt that pointed out there's actually a company that you can go today and pay them to spray some stuff in the sky that's supposedly going to offset your carbon credits.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's what it's about. It's about taxing, you know, the carbon stuff.
Yeah. But to
get back on topic here, what we just talked about with the COVID stuff, when it comes to destabilization, one of the things you want to do is drive wedges in between the population.
Of course.
And that drove a lot of wedges between people, between families, between even married couples, you know, the vaxxed versus the unvaxxed. And that was,
we could talk about that. I can't wait to talk about that with you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to talk about, and we're kind of going all over the place here.
Let me just add this one thing, and I promise. I'll shut up. No, the only reason I brought this up on the COVID point is that if you look on a can of Lysol, it says 99.99% effective. This is something so safe. You've had it under your kitchen sink, in your bathroom. They leave it in public restrooms for anybody to use. You could spray it like Benaca, which I have done, not directly in my mouth, but I'll tell you about that later if you want to know. Point is, it kills coronavirus. It kills SARS. These are actual things. We've had coronavirus. coronavirus and rhinovirus and all these different things. If you look at the can of what this thing kills, streptococcus, I mean, you AIDS, HIV, it's all on there. Freaking, and we all have access to it. In England, it's called Dettol, D-E-T-T-O-L, but here it's called Lysol. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, going back to the whole destabilization, before we jump into more ways that they destabilize us, I just want people to know the military does do this. We just read Mike Pompeo's statements, and these are the places where we have changed the course of war and or implemented regime change. This is just some of them. Germany, Japan, all over Latin America, Philippines, Korea, parts of China, parts of Europe, Panama, Honduras, Nicaragua, Haiti, and believe it or not, Hawaii. We did it in Hawaii before we made that a state. We did that. That's kind of like the political thing. Let's jump into the political division, because right now that's the biggest one. And the reason, I guess I should have prefaced this before, the reason that I'm covering this today is because I'm getting a little worried about people calling for civil war. And there's this whole write-up here. This is from Politico. It's very anti-MAGA. Which I'm not MAGA, but I won't read into it. But they're basically saying that this indictment of Trump has really rallied up his base, and now people are getting ready to go to freaking war over it. And that's by design. That is a political division that they have set up. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because you mentioned that Trump was able to get people, whether you're for or against Trump, you have to admit that Trump was the outsider. He was going to change everything. And then he came on, and then they put all this Russia collusion and everything that was complete bogus to get the other half of the country to hate him. And that was the big divide right there, going back to the Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump race. So what do you think about that? You think that was a staged or put in place? He was picked for that reason, to cause a divide in our country?
You know, the way I've looked at it, and I've said this on air before, I don't think Obama got the gun grab that he wanted in his two terms. Yep. First thing, okay? There were a lot of, again, I don't want to make this a sensitive topic. I think false flag operations and incidents, public incidents, where they went for that grab. I know after the Boston bombing incident with that marathon, you know, they went door to door and violated a lot of people's rights. Remember, they were just like, you know, telling people to get inside, coming down with the army down the street, looking for weapons. You know, do you have any guns?
Katrina.
Like, oh, Katrina. Oh, my God. Yeah. FEMA. And all. Anyway. Yeah. So the thing about Trump is, I feel like he came in at a time they realized that their plan wasn't on schedule, on track anymore. I think the original agenda was 2021. And now
it was
2030.
21st century was the 21, sometime in the 21st century. And then they narrowed it to 2030. It was a specific date. Yeah.
So my position was, you know, until they had Trump, I don't think they really knew how many conservatives, right? Alternative talk media and conspiracy channels and different things really took off. And I don't think they underestimated or didn't have a metric to measure of how many people would use social media, TikTok, and all these other things for more than just, you know, girls selling feet pics or guys showing their fastest car or anything. People are actually starting to communicate and do research and whistleblow and everything like that. And I think this was something new to them, right? It was counterintuitive to their psychological operations, everything they were running through movies, predictive programming, and so on. So it's like, all right, well, how do we measure our resistance? Like, what's the base of this country that's still viable to fight, right? I always bring up this topic. If there's 350 million people in America, how many viable people can actually fight? If we had a foreign invader, you know, internal effect, you know, fight a civil war or whatever, how many men like you who have military training, like myself, who can shoot a gun, who's still able-bodied, right? There's a lot of people that are out of shape, can't even make basic training. There's a lot of people that are infirmed, old, you know, children. So how many people are actually worthy of fighting in this country if you were to throw a weapon in their hands?
Oh, and some of these groups, these paramilitary groups that like to get out and train and run around the woods with their armor and their, you know, their ARs, right. There, a lot of places are trying to outlaw that.
This is the thing. So let's say 60 million. Let's say 60 million. I'm just throwing let's say 60 million. But here's the thing. It's like, so then they run this operation with Trump, and they got the MAGA thing going, waving the flag. You know, he says all the right things about God, country, and, you know, liberty. I'm not saying that the guy doesn't. I'm not pro Trump. I'm not pro Biden. We talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
I'm just for the truth. But I'm thinking, what an easy way now these conservatives, most people that are living a conservative lifestyle, like the Trump supporters, care about family, work, values, you know, and the country. So they weren't on the internet 24/7 putting their head up, you know, being extreme and things like that. But when they came out to all these rallies, now they could take account. Now they can pan that camera around and take actual, you know, biometric scans of every face in the audience, anybody who supported, donated, voted. Now they actually have a number saying, all right, we got this many patriots, constitutionalists, you know, conservatives, and this is our target. This is
And beyond that, they don't even need to get biometrics at that point. Look at what they did with January 6th using geotagging or geofencing. They can tell that you were there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And let's back up even further, because you explained really well how they could use this divide, this massive divide, to identify who's on what side. But, you know, going back to the idea of this being a long-term plan, why do we have a two-party system? You know, that's been done on purpose to be able to do things like this, I believe.
Let me just say one thing that I just realized now as you said that in response. When you had all those people in the Trump crowds, right, and you see just waves of people, right? You know what his when he shows up, everybody shows up. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, that those scanners can't detect when you have too many faces on top of each other. It keeps bouncing around. Just like some people wear these shirts that have animal faces all over it.
Yep.
And these, you know, and it jumps around and stuff. So it's good. And there's other things where you can wear baseball hats with fake nose bridges and fake ears, because your ears are actually the best biometric marker more than any other part of your body. It's more distinct than our fingerprints, just so you know. Point I'm trying to make is that's when they came up with the six. Yeah, no, look it up. The reason, because I had a guy who did that stuff for cryptology and stuff. The point is that this is why they came up with the 6-foot rule. And they knew people were still going to go out in public. You see all these cameras now in Home Depot and everything like that. They needed people 6 feet away so they can get distinct. And it took maybe 2 years to measure. Who knows? You know, to take an account of who's where. But I'm just saying, like, you know, again, when you start talking in this, it sounds like supposition, right? I'm just supposing that this is the case. So, yeah, then it sounds conspiratorial. Anyway.
Yeah, no, biometrics is definitely, I've been studying Mark of the Beast stuff, and I was kind of getting off topic, but since the mid-90s, and I never heard of the word biometrics, but I knew that it had something to do with monetary system, because that's what the Bible says, right? And so I'm just, you know, out of curiosity, you know, pure curiosity and trying to solve the mystery, you know, because I like puzzles. So I'm in here trying to solve is it the barcode? Is it RFID chips? That's when I learned about RFID chips as well. But for some crazy reason, every article I was going into, and this is back before the internet was designed to hide things, when you can get into a campus library, all of their digital documents for free, you know, and you could just browse anything you want, because everyone was proud that they had their stuff on the internet. It was a massive encyclopedia, right? And I found lots of neat stuff that you can't find anymore. But biometrics was always part of this monetary digitization of money. You know, as I was researching, like, how are they going to, I knew that money would go digital, and I'm seeing it happen in real time now with CBDC. I knew this back in the 90s, and biometrics was always tied to it. And I learned about, you know, the different types of biometrics. You get fingerprints, retina scan, you know, facial recognition. I didn't know that about the ears. That's interesting. Very interesting. Real quick, before we move on, I just want to say hi to Karen and Tiger, Angry Tiger. You know him from the Tiger's Den, I think, or Tiger Tales on freeworld.fm. I don't know if you know. He's on.
I don't know, but no, I don't think we've met personally, but yeah.
Okay. But Tiger, I'm wearing the shirt you got me. Quiet Riot. He sent me this shirt. I don't have a concert shirt of any type. So he sent me he knows that I liked Quiet Riot growing up. I would skateboard to it.
Yeah.
Found that out on his show because I requested a song. He does song requests on Tiger Tales in the second hour. And so he sent this to me. So thank you, brother. But anyway, off topic there. I like to give shout outs in the chat when they pop in. But yeah, going back to the two party thing, you were talking about, you know, we think of China as being the long term planners, but getting us down to a two party system has actually been a long time in the works. You know, getting the super PACs so that no one else can compete, not letting any other candidates get into the debates. Now they're not even debating. What's going on with that? It's just accepted that we have to choose one or the other. And that's why I don't think there's any solutions in Washington anymore. But especially the monetary system. Let's do the monetary system. Let's talk about that, because that's an important one. I got some stuff here on that.
You know, you're bringing up crypto. Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just read the history of the Federal Reserve. To finance the American Revolution, I'll put this on screen. This is actually from, I forget what website this was from, federalreserveeducation.org. It's really good. Actually gives you a pretty good background. So to finance the American Revolution, the Continental Congress printed the new nation's first paper money, known as Continentals. It was a fiat system. Okay. Didn't work out so well. I'll kind of breeze through it. Do you know anything about that going back that far?
If that's the same money that the South had that was worthless after the war?
Or no? Yeah, that's where the term was it? Well, this was during the American Revolution. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, but they did some local currencies as well. And I'll kind of skip through it a little bit. But they did an attempt at central banking. They had a couple of attempts. And then finally, actually, I'll just pull this off and read.
Well, back then, didn't every state have the ability to print their own currency?
Yeah, and there was a problem. The problem was that, you know, let's just say I'm from Missouri, you're from Jersey. What's my Missouri dollar worth to your Jersey dollar? Right. So then they had the Federal Reserve, which acted somewhat like what our International Bank of Settlements acts like now. So it was basically what we have in the fiat world, but on a small scale. Right. And then let's see, flip through here. I had this stuff on my notes. I hate doing notes, but there was so much here. I didn't want to miss anything. Okay. So the real problem started in 1913, right? That's when they created, basically they claimed it was a decentralized banking system, which I don't know how that works, but anyway. And then you talked about 1933. And by the way, when they came up with the national dollar, or whatever you want to call it, the fiat, it wasn't fiat really at that time because it was still backed by gold. Okay. So it's not like they could just print more of it. Well, I guess they could, but technically you were supposed to be backed by gold, but that's also the same year that the first federal income tax was implemented. So they made you turn in all your gold so they would have something to back it, right? All your gold and silver notes, as they called them. So they basically forced Americans into this one monetary system. And once they had control of that, they implemented the income tax. Now, the income tax was for different reasons, but that gave them the power to be able to do that, which I found interesting. I found that out today. If Tiger was on here, he could probably tell you all about it.
You bring up a good point. I want to tie it back to crypto, because the argument I have for the longest time about crypto is it a money? You know, is it a dollar? Like a dollar? Is it a currency? Is it a commodity? Is it an investment? You know, instrument? Like, what is crypto? Right? And I think this was the same thing with XRP. I was like strong for XRP for the longest time, saying, you know, when I saw that thing go down with what was it, Ripple? And the SEC and all that. And I'm like, that's it. I was like, they've tapped it. XRP is going through a certain, they're looking at, they're framing it. It's going to be in use, just like there's going to be Bitcoin, Ethereum, and XRP. I truly believe. Even if you look back to The Economist in 1988, there was a famous cover with the Phoenix rising out of the flames, and it showed all the basket of currencies that it's stepping on, you know, in flames. And here it has emboldened on its chest the actual symbol that they use for XRP. Okay. So this was predicted years ago about the Economist is the CIA rag, right? And the public rag to read. Point I'm leading to is that when people talk about fiat currency, I always laugh. I'm like, look, if you don't want your frigging fiat, give it to me and I'll eat your Brussels sprouts too. Because
I put mine into commodities like, you know, guns, ammo, property, gold and silver, something that as the dollar crashes and burns, if I don't need that money right now, I buy something that later when inflation goes through the roof. Let's say I bought that gold coin for $100, just making up numbers here.
Right.
If I kept the $100, it's going to get me $50 worth of stuff now, but I have that coin. So now I need to buy some stuff. I go sell the coin, and now the coin, I get $200 for it. So I can get my $200 worth of stuff, you know?
Sure.
So it's,
is there a way I can send you a picture? Can you put images up here? If I email
you, you have a present. I don't think you can
send present. Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah.
What do I do? Slides or
share screen? Let's see.
Okay, hold on. Share screen. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I don't want to do this. I know you were talking mid sentence, but I just wanted to share something.
Oh, I'll have to pop it up. You can put it in there, and I'll see it in the back end, and then I'll pop it up when you're ready.
Okay.
But the reason I wanted to touch on the currency was because if you go through and I got charts of inflation and all this other stuff to show you how bad it was getting a centralized non-backed currency. And the where that falls into destabilization is economic hard times, right? We got homeless people on the streets that, you know, can't afford housing. We got, you know, they raise the minimum wage because of inflation. And then all that does is it pushes the people in the middle class down into the lower class. That's all it does. Because let's just say minimum wage was $10 an hour and I'm making 15 as a manager and you're making 10. And they say, oh, we're going to make the minimum wage $15 an hour. They're not going to give me a raise. So now they just made me into a minimum wage worker. But everything that I purchase now goes up, you know, so it's or you get what's called shrinkflation, where you get less for your dollar. So what do we got here? And so, back to finish my point off. I think that the messing with the currency, number one, is a way to make some people rich. But number two, it's also a way to divide the nation even further, because you got the haves and the have nots. You got the rich versus the poor. We saw this with the what was the Antifa that did the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street and all that stuff. They create enemies for us to fight internally, you know, while they run around and do whatever they want, and they're doing their stuff abroad and implementing their master plan. And that's what this is all about. Just taking a look at what's happened in this country and understanding that everything has been done by design to get our focus on each other and right. fight amongst each other so that they can do this globalist plan. And it's not a conspiracy, because you can go look it up. We have American political figures who are parts of these organizations that have their plan published. It's published on the internet. You can go look it up. They yeah, want us in a 15-minute city. They don't want us to drive cars. At one point, they're talking about, you know, when you get to a certain age, you just need to go commit suicide in a pod. That's no joke. That's no joke.
That's the basis for Soylent Green and Logan's Run. I mean, they haven't hidden that.
Yeah, sorry to run off on that. It's just, you know, no. Like we were talking about before the show, there's so many, this is so intertwined that it's hard to go through this in a logical sense, because everything is tied to everything else. And it's all about division and fracturing a nation. We've done it to other nations over and over and over again. And if you want to go look up anything we've done in any other nation where we've crashed and burned it, either to sway a war or to install our own regime, what's going on here is what went on there to spark that off. And so people need to pay attention to that. I know they can't pay attention to it because they're too busy trying to feed their family, but it's important. And don't fall for this civil war narrative. You know, I'm not even going to call it a narrative. They're pushing us in that direction. Please don't fall for it. And I want to talk about the border here in a little bit about that. So, all right, here we go.
Well, I wanted to say about fiat currency, like, so, you know, I invested in silver back. I had sold my house at the peak of the housing market in 2006. You know, I did my due diligence. And the guy who trained me on silver commodities, he used to work with the Rockefellers, you know. So he was doing colloidal silver before anybody else, okay? And, anyway, point being is that, you know, fiat and cash itself changes depending on when it's in use, when it's in transaction. Stagflation is what we have to avoid, right? Stagflation is like taking all your money and stuffing it in the mattress. It doesn't do anything. However, it's safe in the sense that, let's say grandma's been saving all her money in shoe boxes and different things around the house. She can disperse it to her grandchildren or whoever she wants to give it to without the government know about it. There's no taxes, no whatever, right? She's not going to set up a trust and all this other stuff. There's other times when you want your money in the bank because you want a certain credit rating and you want to be able to borrow against it and all this other stuff. So the transaction changes based on, the value of it changes based on the transaction, right? So if I want to sleep with a woman, I want to buy this or that. It commoditizes everything that you want to buy with it, except when you go to Venezuela or one of these countries in Zimbabwe, like their currency was hyperinflated to $1 trillion notes. But you go to Venezuela, somebody would rather have a gallon of milk than you handing them a $10 bill, because they might have the $10 bill, but not be able to buy anything with it. So you see what I'm saying? It's like, it is fiat in the one sense. And in the original conception of it, you know, we're told that, you know, the bankers were basically the blacksmiths. They were able to construct the cages and the safes and all that to hold the gold and silver, so people don't have to carry all this stuff. You'd be weighed down, burdened down. It would be obvious you're carrying bricks of silver and gold with you, and any thief or, you know, whatever. So you had basically an IOU, right? Promissory note that you can then bring in and cash it at the bank. But what did they do? They got greedy and they said, hey, we know everybody's not going to come in at the same time to get their money. we can start loaning it out nine times over. And that's why we have fractional reserve lending. That's what.
Yeah, I had that. Yep, one of my things when they create new money out there.
Yeah, but at the time that I bought this, I got it at $7.70 an ounce. I was doing my due diligence. I saw where the market was going with the housing market. So between 2008 and 2012, I wrote it up to 49, took positions on it, and I made a windfall. This is 10,000 ounces of silver. This is what it looks like. And when I used to hand out any of these 100-ounce bars and pass them around at parties, I'd have family members over, everybody's face lit up. They knew exactly what they were holding in their hand. So yeah, that's what that looks like. That's what 10,000 ounces of silver looks like.
Yeah, I wanted to talk. You talked about saving your money, you know, grandma handing it to her kids. This is part of how they've made us poor and caused economic disparity. Let's say grandma earned the equivalent of whatever would make her a millionaire, you know, your great, great grandma. And she stuffed it in a mattress. And if she would have used it, then she would have been living high on the hog and all that. Well, this is a chart here of the buying power. And so this is basically what it takes to buy $100 worth of stuff going back to 1799. And you see, it didn't fluctuate much. And then what happens in 1913, you know,
the monster of Jekyll Island is what happened.
Yeah. And it just is rampant. So now if you found grandma's, let's say it was $100,000 and that makes her like a equivalent of a millionaire today, you'd be lucky to buy a new car. You couldn't buy a house with it. You know, that's how bad it has gotten. And by design, going back to our theme, which is the destabilization of America, they have to have people poor. They have to have us poor so that we're too busy trying to survive. And then we're also envious of those other people who aren't poor. And we saw this Antifa, you know, riots. And
stuff. You know, there's a reason why in the Middle East, they don't believe in, you know, they have Sharia and they don't believe in usury.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at derivatives markets and other destructive weapons of, you know, mass destruction in terms of economic sense, this is what they've done to us. When they introduced credit cards in the 70s, the one guy who came up with it, Milton something, I can't think of his full name, but he says, when I designed the credit card for Visa, I realized right then and there, if we don't have women in the workplace, they're not spending, they're staying at home. So we can get them to spend and then get them to overspend, get everybody to buy on credit and charge them interest. And make sure everybody's, you know, working while we then indoctrinate the children, get them into schools, get them as young as you can, you know, preschool and everything else. And, you know, all these things stacked and combined together, it's all about wealth transfer, again, from the middle class and from everything we own. We're seeing it with our housing now. BlackRock and Vanguard are buying everything up. And this is the, you know, what I think personally, look, Bitcoin came out, it was used digitally for trading cards originally with Mt. Gox and, how is it, Pokemon cards or something? No, Magic the Gathering cards and stuff like that. So it wasn't even a real thing. Okay, now it's up to like what, 69,000, 70,000, 80,000 per Bitcoin right now. I don't know, look it up. But the point being is that I think personally it's gone that high because they have to figure out a way to balance out like all the debt they've created. You know, this $34-35 trillion debt that we're never going to pay back. And the only way to do that is have this hyperinflated currency where if everybody can just own a fraction or even just one, you know what I mean? Then they could satisfy anything, but they're hollowing it out of all our actual value, all our real commoditized value.
Well,
and they can turn it all off. You know, they just turn off the internet of a fake EMP, you know, an event. And then everything just gets wiped away just like that. Including, it reminds me of like September 10th when Rumsfeld was on the hook for $2.3 trillion. And then thankfully 9/11 happened. And
yeah.
It just went down the memory hole. Like,
what you know, heck? That's something I've never considered. They go to a CBDC and have a catastrophic event like that and wipe everything clean. Meanwhile, all the fiat that the rich had, they've bought into the hard commodities or gold and silver. So
land.
Yep. Bill Gates is buying up all that farmland. Now I think he's got other plans for that.
The Bush family has all that land in Patagonia and all that other crap, you know, aquifers. So, I mean, all the, yeah. Anyway,
that's kind of like, and I brought this up before. I was like, if you know you're going to declare bankruptcy, why not just go max out your credit cards beforehand, you know, buy all this neat stuff and then declare bankruptcy? I there may be some validity to that. You know, they keep warning of EMPs and all this missile technology they're talking about. I've known about EMPs forever, since I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
You know, but all of a sudden they're starting to talk about a little more now in the mainstream about what that could mean for our power grid. But you're right, the banking system, you know, they're supposed to have redundancies built in, but they could always say, oh, it failed. You know,
I'll tell you like this, the same way they built up this mythical figure, Satoshi Nakamoto, right? Who supposedly created the Bitcoin. I thought it was the most clever thing ever because now it appeals to the hipsters, to all the Reddits, all the people on the dark web, all the cool kids, you know, that like to think they're hackers when they're, you know, they're nothing but script kiddies, right? They run other people's scripts. The point being is there was a sense of, oh, we're going to top the government. We're going to have our independence. We're the new generation. We're going to have control over this money and nobody's going to regulate it. And I'm thinking, man, what a great cover story. Because here's the thing. The government is not stupid. They know that people are innovative and they can't account with all their measures and metrics. And this, again, this is why they did COVID as well. They have to account for variable change. And how do you record variable change except run it in a real-time situation? Meaning you have to run it in real-time scenarios in the public. Okay, you can't do a military exercise. You can't do a simulation.
Right.
So they put it out there. They put this Bitcoin out there. And they said, let these fuckers use it. Let them exploit it. Let them figure out all the machinations of how to utilize it. All these trade, you know, we'll build our laws and regulations and everything else based on the way people are doing it. We're going to learn from it. Our AI is going to examine it. Let them hack it. You know, let them exploit it. And then we'll take that all back. And so this figure of Satoshi Nakamoto is this perfect figure that doesn't exist. So I think they're going to do the same thing later on when they have the debt go up to, let's say $45 trillion, okay? And they know that they can't fix it. Nobody can fix it. What are they going to do? This mythical hero, maybe an Elon Musk type or somebody, is going to hack the system and take it down. It'll inconvenience us all for 6 months, but it's going to wipe all our debt. You're going to wake up one day and there's no more bank records of anything. All those contracts on your mortgages got sent to an island in Jamaica or some shit. They don't have the hard blue ink signature. And sorry, we're done. All the servers got fried. All we have now is this AI cloud. Let's just start over. Forgive it. Mea culpa. It's easier to, you know, ask for forgiveness than it is to get a hard no up front. That's my position. That's my conspiracy.
That's going to cause a lot of strife if that were to happen, going back to the destabilization. Because you have people that have saved and saved and saved, and they worked hard, and they saved their money.
Of course.
Even though they're getting taxed, and they were 30 to 40 to even 50% when you start figuring out, you know, not just your income tax, but you got your property tax added onto that. You got your state tax added onto that. You got your sin tax, like your cigarettes if you smoke, or your alcohol. You know, they tax things extra. Now they're talking, and this is a topic I'm probably going to talk on tomorrow, 11% gun tax on all firearms and ammunition in Colorado.
So and now an exit tax for moving out of California.
So yeah, an exit tax. That. So yeah, so you got some people that have managed to save their money, put their equity in their home, which is already, you know, kind of getting screwed up because that bubble is going to pop. And then, you know, you got the guy who's, you know, wasted his money on drugs and alcohol, or maybe he just didn't feel like working and wanted to live off the system. And all of a sudden they're equal because the system's been wiped clean. That's going to cause a lot of problems. You know what I'm saying? A lot of problems. A lot of people are going to be really pissed off. So
yes and no. Let me say it this way. So there's this funny joke, right? And this woman's walking down the street in Russia and she looks over and she sees a sign that says sausage, $5 a pound. And she looks across the street at the other guy and his says, you know, sausage, $1 a pound. So she goes into the regular shop. She usually goes, it's $5 a pound. She says, hey, she goes, how come you're selling it $5 a pound? He's selling it at $1 a pound. Like, why don't you lower your prices? And he goes, trust me, if I had any sausage to sell at all, I would sell it for $1 a pound.
Nice.
So the joke is once everybody's equalized, we're going to be scrambling for other things. The idea of living like the Joneses or your socioeconomic position is going to be equalized really quick. Your ass is going to be in the fire. It's going to be like 9/11 times 365, not 2 weeks after the event.
And
people are going to have to cooperate fast. So guess what? Little communities and places in rural America where all these people that they're targeting, like the, you know, like I said, they had to take metric count of all the conservatives and patriots and stuff. Those people are going to have something to trade with. They're going to have their communities know who their neighbors are. They're going to have the guns and everything else to make their little encampments. I hate to say it. Not look, if they had to line up everybody today, if they were to be very draconian and say, look, we're going to line everybody up, going to put a gun to your head, and in 1 minute, you're going to answer. What do you do on a daily basis? What do you contribute to the system? Why should you live? Are you a useless eater? Now, when people say useless eater, like Henry Kissinger, he usually refers to the poor and people that he thinks are undesirables. No, there's a lot of rich useless eaters that don't contribute back to society. They're like parasites. They walk out with, you know, flatbeds worth of food from Costco and everywhere else. Yeah, they're somewhat contributing to the economy, but do you hire anybody? How much do you pay in taxes? How many jobs do you provide for families? You know what I'm saying? What do you give back to this country? if they went down the line, how many people would they just shoot in the head and say, all right, it was a fair democratic. I mean, this is really extreme here.
I can tell you right now that 47% of Americans, I'll say 47% of taxpaying Americans don't pay taxes after they get their tax return at the end of the year. It's on the 50% of us and to pay 100% of the bill, which we can't pay because, you know, we run deficits all the time. But no, that's a good point. And one thing you mentioned, and I get a lot of flack for this when I tell people, you know, that I buy gold and silver, mostly silver because I ain't rich. And they're saying, well, you can't eat silver. You can't eat silver. That's true. That's true. But I'm also building a garden out here. I might get some chickens. If I fence in the yard, I'll have eggs. I got 45 acres. I could go get walnuts up there, or, you know, hunt for mushrooms like Tiger likes to do. There's lots of
things. Can I just say,
yeah.
Can I just say one thing though? You know where silver and gold is totally useless in a post US dollar collapse? If you need baby formula or you need diapers or you need whatever, you know, those things, if I go to give you a gold coin, you're like, where am I going to spend it? There's no banks. There's no stores. There's nothing. The infrastructure of America just collapsed. My kid's shitting his brains out. I would like a 30 pack of diapers. You see what I'm saying? Like commodities change depending. Now here's the point I'm trying to get at. In third world countries, if an EMP hit the whole world, they shut down the whole world, the internet, everything, they're not going to be affected like first world countries. Start there. And because a lot of those countries are agrarian in scope, right? Like they're farmers and they have local communities and stuff and trade and everything like that. They're going to do just fine. So they're not going to face civil war and everything. They've already lived this way. They already know how to live in Paraguay and Uruguay and Venezuela. You know what I mean? They're not going to go nuts. People here on First Avenue, look, you see people get upset when they don't get their pumpkin spice at Starbucks, for Christ's sake. Oh, first world problem. I'm so sorry.
Well, the going back to the silver, when I got silver, I got most of it. I mean, I got a couple bars, but most of it is either a 1 ounce round or it's fractional. It's very small. Or I got a whole bunch of the 90% half dollars, right? And where I see that being potentially useful is like I was saying, if I'm growing vegetables indoors, or I could grow weed. People are going to want weed, right? I can grow some weed. And let's say that I need a gallon of milk, but the guy doesn't have any milk today. But I can't do a straight barter. So what I can do is, and you have to do this within a community. You have to set this up ahead of time. Almost and come to an agreement that we are going to agree that this one small coin has a value of work of whatever. So if I provide you with your marijuana or your carrots or whatever, I'm going to require two coins. And then later on, when you let me know when you have milk and I'll come and give you those two coins back for the milk. So it's kind of a store of labor, if you will. That's how I see. And that's why I didn't get any like massively big, you know, how are you going to trade a 100 ounce bar for something small? You know, you can't really do that. But anyway, I see your point. You know, bartering is going to be important. And maybe the gold and silver will be absolutely worthless. I think it will be absolutely worthless at first. But if you have a community that agrees to trade in that and agrees on a value of it, and Vince Agnelli talks about this, and he has ways to rebuild our society peacefully through zip codes, and basically local areas can come up with whatever they want as money, as long as everyone agrees that it's money. Anyway, we got really sidetracked with that. Let's take a look at, are you still there? I don't see your picture. All right, well, we'll keep going on. I'll keep trucking right along. So the other part, let's go back to our definition. Our definition of destabilization was the act of making a government area, political group lose power or control, or making a political or economic solution less strong or safe by causing changes and problems. So let's talk about feeling less strong or safe. Gun legislation. They're pushing gun legislation, which does a couple different things. Number one, that causes a big wedge between those who think we should have guns and those who think we shouldn't have guns. And they'll call you baby killer and all this stuff, or, you know, you're in favor of mass shootings if you like you like your AR or whatever. You know, why do you need that much for hunting? And then you got those who, you know, or they say everyone should have a gun. They're to the point where everyone should absolutely carry a gun with them. Let's go back to the old West, you know, which I would fall closer to that side. I don't think everyone needs to carry a gun, but I think everyone should have the right to carry one. But that causes more and more division. And it makes some people feel less safe. You know, a lot of people will see these crimes, which if you look, the crimes are happening. The vast majority of gun crimes are happening in gun-free zones in states where the gun is illegal. And then the people feel unsafe. So what do? You call for the police. You call for the police to help you. You know, more control over me. And then what you wind up with is a bunch of speeding tickets and jaywalking tickets is what you actually wind up with. But anyway, I was talking on the gun control stuff being a way to divide us. And also, it's as per our definition, make us feel less safe.
Sorry about that.
I feel safe. No, you're good.
I had to stop the cleaning people from coming in and vacuuming and everything. I had to go run and intercept them. I'm so sorry.
All right. I don't know if you could hear me, but I was talking about gun legislation being another dividing factor. You want to kill the children, you know, because of the mass shootings in schools. We need to get rid of the guns. And you're trying to take my gun. And, you know, big one there. The pro-gun and anti-gun people is another tactic where they cause division. And unfortunately, they use horrible tragedies that happen in gun-free zones, just so you know, and a lot of times in, you know, highly restricted cities where people don't have guns. So I actually feel less safe in a place like Chicago or California, Los Angeles or something like that. I feel less safe than I do here in Missouri, because even if I'm not carrying, I know somebody out there is carrying. And if some stuff pops off, right. Joe Bob over there probably has at least two handguns on him. So I, you know, the cops come after a crime is committed. Okay. People stop crimes as they're occurring. Unless you're stupid enough to try and commit a crime right in front of a police officer. You know, that's how I see it, but that's another dividing thing. So do you want to talk a little bit on gun control and how that's been, the narrative has been pushed to destabilize us and get us to fight with each other?
Oh man, you're hitting me with topics that I never talk about, just for the fact that, you know, I don't take hard nosed positions or hard line positions on things so that people can, you know, try to nail me with it.
Well, you don't have
I can play the devil's advocate on either side of it. I know quite a bit about guns and gun laws and all this other stuff. And again, it comes down to situational ethics there's so many ways you could frame it. I mean, in the moment that there's a riot, let's say coming down the street, and people are out of control. If you had that kind of situation, people would love to have guns. I mean, you saw what happened. You remember 1991 with Reginald Denny with that whole thing with Rodney King, and afterwards, there was a truck driver. He got caught up, got hit with a brick, and all that shit. Do you remember the Koreans on top of their rooftops defending their stores?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
they weren't dealing with that bullshit. Now they weren't shooting at anybody. These were their customers. These are the people in their neighborhood that came in on the regular. They already knew their temperament, their climate, their gang mentality, whatever you want to call it. All right, for that socioeconomic tier, but they weren't about to lose their friggin' store, and people got the message real quick. So yeah, as a deterrent, a gun is a great thing. I hate to point at countries like Switzerland or Swiss. You know, they make it mandatory that they go out and everybody's gun, you know, gun trained from childhood. You know, women, everybody, they're allocated so many bullets, or, you know, and all this stuff. That's, I don't like to talk about because it's socialistic in nature. The point is that every gun person that I know, gun person, I sound like a friggin' woke liberal. Every man and woman who owns a gun, every red-blooded American. Everybody I know who has a gun is usually responsible. You know, taking some kind of gun classes, reads up on gun literature, goes to the range frequently enough that they know how to utilize their gun, how to load it, how to clean it, not to aim it, put your finger on the trigger, even playing around. When you see all these gun deaths and all these accidental, you know, things, it's usually kids or people that don't know how to handle a weapon, right?
And that's their parents. That is their parents' responsibility. And I would say it's because we have outsourced raising our children to the federal school system. Course. So just a side note.
But I'm talking about the people I know. Again, I hate to say it this way, the real men and women of this country, the backbone of this country, good people. And you know who you are out there. I don't have to describe it, but they're responsible people. They're responsible for their lives, the people that they love and protect. That's why they have those guns. Some of them do live in rural areas that people like me in New Jersey and the suburbs don't understand. You know, we don't see bears or elk or other things on a regular basis, bobcats, coyotes, and, you know, what the hell's out there. But, you know, guns are used for that too. And, you know, people make these silly arguments all the time, especially, you know, certain people on a certain side of the middle, you know, what side? You know, and they'll say, well, you know, back then they had muskets and they only had to shoot this. Now, you have a friggin' AK-47 and that round could penetrate the sheetrock and hit your neighbor the next house over. Now, yeah, there's a good argument. But then I'm the type of guy, I would have a shotgun and I'd have it loaded with double aught. I'd have some split shells, maybe a slug. I would mix it up. You know what I mean? I would take a warning shot. You know, I would shoot ahead of the person 3 feet on the pavement so I could take them out at the shins when it ricochets up. I mean, there's... I'm a different kind of guy. I think about these things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to bring it back to,
when you say gun control, let's go. I know. I don't mean to be, I'm being extreme here. I'm just being,
We don't have to take a stance. I want to take a look at how it's, you know, tragedies are used and narratives are spun to cause that hard nosed stance one way or the other. You know, the media is,
I don't like legislation and regulation. I don't like anything that implores too many laws. Because then they start to tie you up with all this bullshit, and then they know exactly who has what and what house to knock on for a gun grab and everything. You know, that's what I don't like.
Well, NFA, and this is going to come in kind of important, the National Firearms Act. We reported on this a couple times. So the National Firearms Act was another one where the government created the problem. The problem, they created prohibition, which created Al Capone, and then the St. Valentine massacre. I think that's what it was. That sparked a national outcry for gun control to get these machine guns, short barreled shotguns and stuff off. There was like three or four controlled items, but and it's also rumored that the police set that up. I mean, they didn't do the shooting, but they set it up for that. All those gangsters to be there at one place and then shoot everything.
All right. Let me say something funny. My family is from Newark, New Jersey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need a WAP with a Tommy gun back in the 1920s and 30s shooting up the place on a drive-by. Just as like I don't need a black guy in the 60s going by and doing a drive-by with something else. Point is anybody who's shooting out a car window with a submachine gun or a machine gun, that's going to be a problem. So yeah, you stage an event like that, it's going to create fear and all that. I mean, it's not a practical. Like you said, it has to be.
Yeah.
I don't think regular people need fast firing weapons like that in close proximity, but I do think everybody needs to be armed. You know what I'm saying? Shotgun, hand pistol, maybe a carbine, you know.
The point I was going to make though, because I want to bring this up later, is that they created the problem through prohibition, which created the gangsters, and it made sense. People cried for it. So they created the problem. They had the solution ready. And all they needed was to steer public opinion to get their solution implemented. And ever since that, it has been, now it's a bureaucracy. They don't have to really do any kind of, it could be an executive order. We saw this with bump stocks. We saw this with pistol braces. We've seen this with, they do legislate some stuff, like when they did the assault weapons ban back in the past, which expired. The thing is that for the most part, the bureaucracy, which is unelected, now they have a foot in the door to expand terms, change definitions, and grow their power base. And remind me to get back to why, you know, using that as example, that's what we have to watch out for with this border situation right now. You see what I'm saying?
Well, the joke I was making was to set it up that no matter what the socioeconomic tier, the person in question. For me, I don't think people do things without motivation. Okay. And so even on a regular basis, most neighborhoods, 99% of the part of, you know, America, there aren't drive-bys and shootings. If you follow the trail, there's usually some kind of gang association, violence, trade and commerce, trade being drugs or some other thing. And then it's driven by who, you know, who put the drugs on the streets in the 80s and crack in certain neighborhoods and cocaine down in Florida, right? They mashed whatever the socioeconomic level is at. Who brought the guns in during Ollie North, right? And the, you know, follow the money trail, like they say.
Like I was saying before, it's so hard to talk about this in a grand, you know, from the 10,000 mile high view, because everything is so intertwined. A lot of the drug problems, alcohol problems, things like that come from economic disparity, which goes back to the banking system. The fractional reserve banking and the hyperinflation, people feel helpless. They feel, you know, when it no longer can take just dad or just mom working to have, you know, two cars in the driveway, a white picket fence and a house, you know, 2.5 kids and a dog, you know, now it takes two people working and they can barely feed their family. So they turn to things like drugs and alcohol as an escape. They may have to go rob a liquor store or something to try and get some money. So there goes your crime rate going up. And I agree. Most of it's probably gang on gang or you know, some kind of violence that has to do with.
Yeah, but there's also a cascading effect of these ancillary and secondary and all these other things that come off of it, like the for-profit prison system, right? And how they've stacked the deck, you know, with certain populations. And, you know, again, they create, it's like the problem reaction solution. So, you know, look, it's easy to point at somebody who has a drug problem or an alcohol problem and say, oh, look, he's a drunk or he's a drug addict, right? But they don't talk about the person who watches Netflix 24/7, watches, you know, binge watches Hulu and everything else. They're anesthetized or numb in a different way, right? They have all these different ways of controlling people. There's, you know, so it's like if I have a handicap and it's only mental, if I'm slow, people might not be as polite to me as they would to somebody who's got crutches. You see what I'm saying? Because when you have a physical tell, you can see what the problem is. You can address it differently. What I'm saying is that the propaganda matrix, the control measures that are in place, like you're talking about, all these things are, they're not only subtle and subvert, but when you really start to analyze it, you start to see the bigger picture, how it's all, like you said, intertwined and has an agenda at the top. What bothers me is, what's the motivation for the rich? Because they say when you're so rich, money doesn't matter anymore. And so it's power. And if power doesn't mean anything anymore, then what is it? And I'm thinking to myself, maybe there's somebody that they're answering to or a bigger thing that's the situation so much more dire that we're going to pray for these days that we're living through now as opposed to what's coming.
Wow, that's a scary thought. But yeah, let me jump to this. So we were talking about the media, right? Media steering narratives. You've heard of Mockingbird Media?
Sure.
Right. And that media is a big one for the gun control. And right now, before we get into the border, I want to talk about the media, because the media has driven drove the narrative. Here's some of their things. What? Safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective, right? Common talking points. Manufactured crisis. Remember, under Trump, the border thing was a manufactured crisis, right? Well, it is a manufactured crisis because it was a planned crisis. It's a crisis now that was manufactured. So it's just not the same way that they were referring to it. Mostly peaceful protest. Here's your mostly peaceful protest right here. I guess I don't have it. No, I don't have it on the stage. But anyway, how did they get people to believe this? I want to show this clip right here.
Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
I can pause it. What you got?
Oh, yeah, this one. No, go ahead. Probably this person.
Yeah, I love this.
This is exactly, I want to tell you something about predictive programming. This is perfect that you play this. Go ahead.
Okay.
Responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities,
the El Paso, Las Cruces communities,
Eastern Iowa communities,
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about troubling and irresponsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media
All right, I think we get the idea. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but you can find these for anything, for talking points on the COVID vaccine, on the border crisis, like I said, the safe and effective stuff, the mostly peaceful protest. It's a pandemic of the unvaccinated, you know, and that was another one to drive a wedge in the community to break it down and destabilize. It was pitting the vaccinated against the unvaccinated, and it got very nasty in places, like people literally beating each other up.
And so, I was always anti-vax. My son's not vaccinated, and I did a lot of studies on it. I had a woman named Janine Barcello on my show and talked about that. And I even helped with a website that had all the medical, philosophical, and religious exemptions for every state furnished on it back in 2000. This woman was working with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And so, like, I've always been, you know, even chemtrails. Did we mention chemtrails earlier, or was that before the show? But I was doing stuff with, it was just me and Clifford E. Carnicom were the only two people out there putting information and on Jeff Rentz and different programs and stuff. And, you know, people look at me like, what are you talking about? I was like, you don't see these things? I'm like examining it, you know, I'm a photographer by trade. So there's one thing I want to tell you, and it's good you brought up this clip. Let me ask you a question. Who are the two boogeymen, enemies of America when 9/11 happened. What were the two names we kept hearing?
It was Iraq.
No, the men.
The men. I don't remember their names. I don't remember their names.
So Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And
yeah, in Iraq, and, right?
And
Osama bin Laden. Yeah.
Right. Those are the names we heard, right? So we heard it on a daily basis. Even after when 9/11 happened that day, there was starting to talk Osama bin Laden, right? I'm like, Jesus Christ, that was quick. How'd they figure that out so quick, right? And then for the next year or two, it was always Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, right? And I'm looking at this, and when Obama got in, I started laughing at myself. I was like, wow. I was like, they really got us going. I was like, here's a little poem I wrote. Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden. Saddam Hussein, Barack Hussein? Barack Hussein Obama. No, Osama. Osama bin Laden. Obama bin Laden. What? Osama bin Laden, Hussein, Barack. You know, you say it's like it's all this interchange, but it was in our heads so much. It reminds me of that Will Smith movie with Margot Robbie. It's called Focus. And he's manipulating this one guy during a bet. And the whole day he's been hitting him with the number 55, 55. The guy doesn't realize it's all over the place. And he makes a bet with him on a football thing for $1 million. The guy picks out number 55 in the crowd just on because he's been programmed the whole day. Yeah. Didn't even realize it was in the music and everything. That's how I'm thinking to myself. This is exactly why Obama got in. People were conditioned to say his name.
Yeah. Barack, well, you're talking Hussein, psyops. Obama. You're talking psyops right there. And that's what the media is, an arm of a psyop operation. And psyop is.
But I'm saying it's that subtle. I'm saying it's that subtle now. And it's not like the old. You know, words, a subliminal programming in the American flag, you know, da, 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 da. And at the bottom, if you slow down the frame rate, you're actually seeing like this, you know, subliminal messages. It's not like that anymore. It's look at the scan rate of our monitors are so fast now. And we got this 4K and all that. Our human eye sees at 8,000 scans per minute. So we're taking in all this information so quick. And now we only need 24 frames for continuity. Can you imagine the amount of things that they could subtly inject into all these digital TVs and 4K and 248 hertz scan rate?
Real quick, I just got to say this.
I'm sorry, man.
No. This goes along with subliminal, and I'm going to have to check into this. And by the way, let me say hi to a couple people. Freckles99 joined the chat, and Risha M. I see Risha all the time in all the different shows I watch. How you doing, Risha? So, I think there. See if there's any comments in there. The Minds of Men, great little documentary. Okay, I'll check that out. The Minds of Men. But anyway, interesting fact. When I lived in Georgia, I had both my grandsons living with me. One's with his father now, and now the other one still lives with us. Both of these kids on their own. My older grandson did it first. He'd be running around the house like Tasmanian devil, right? And an Ask Your Doctor commercial would come on, and he would stop and stare at the TV until the commercial was over. Every single Ask Your Doctor commercial captured his attention. Like, he wouldn't even sit and watch Coco Melon for more than 2 or 3 minutes. Like, he was into playing. Now he's off with his father in Colorado, and the younger one is at that age now where he's running around like a Tasmanian devil. Same thing. Ask Your Doctor commercials.
Wow.
So tell me why that is. And there's another couple commercials too. We didn't have any kind of cable back in Georgia. We just had what comes over the airwaves, and you'll get a lot of these, you know, have you been injured in an accident, call, you know, the tort lawyers, you know, and those would capture his attention.
Wentworth or something.
Yeah.
JJ Wentworth.
Yeah. It's, they would capture their attention. I'm positive that there's some kind of subliminal messaging going on, especially every single one of these, Ask Your Doctor commercials to push drugs. And drugs are another big problem that are dumbing people down in this country.
Yeah. Well, anyway. I'll give you another one. What about our phones when we put them near our beds at night? Some people keep them in their beds.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, as soon as you go to sleep, those microphones, by the way, are super sensitive. I was in telecommunications. And let me tell you something. They can, when they monitor, they can narrow it down to a specific frequency just to pick up voice. So even if there's background noise, city noise, whatever, they could just narrow it down on your voice. But also they can broadcast at a low, extremely low frequency, ELF. So that your audible senses can't hear it, but you're picking it up on a much deeper level. So when you're in that REM sleep, if that thing's sitting next to you and it's listening, it's waiting for the cue of one, no motion. They see you're not activating it and scrolling through your screen. They're taking all these measurements all the time. They know when you're awake. It's like Santa now, right? And all of a sudden, as soon as you go out and you're sleeping, that thing could be broadcasting to you just like the movie They Live. Yeah. Sleep, consume.
I'm telling you this.
Consume.
I woke up.
Keep that thing
this
in a bag
morning.
And out of your bedroom.
I woke up this morning exhausted. For the last, I don't know, month or so, every night when I go to bed, I turn off my Wi-Fi router because it has two bands. It has your B through G and then the N. So it's like having two routers right there. My phone has two bands on it for Wi-Fi. My wife's phone has two bands on it for Wi-Fi. My TV is a smart TV. I did the inventory, and it's over 30 devices, whether it be my devices, my Wi-Fi, my neighbor's Wi-Fi, that I can see, that I know of, that's all broadcasting. So anyway, long story short, for a couple months now, a month or more, I've been turning all of that off at night, and I've been getting a lot better sleep. Last night, I forgot to turn it off, and I woke up absolutely exhausted this morning. Absolutely exhausted, because I've been slowly getting better and better sleep. So when I went back to that, my sleep has been interrupted because of that. And that's one of the other things that I think is part of the breaking or the dividing or, you know, deconstruction of America is, you know, you and I have both looked into the side effects of these higher frequencies. 2.4 gig, which is what your microwave runs on, by the way. 2.4 gig and higher, and in that range. Yeah, I think it's one to.
Well, that's a they call it junk. It's a junk frequency that they can just throw.
Yeah, they throw crap on it, and that has those frequencies cause irritability, overexposure to them. I'll say irritability. They cause sleeplessness. They cause anxiety. Studies show it. Like the NIH has documents on it. So the idea that we're being bombarded with this stuff, I think, is contributing to all this social unrest we have. I really do, you know, and whether that was intentional or not.
And I use my phone a lot of times. There's codes you can put in your phones. You can download apps, and I always monitor what's around me. So when I'm out in nature, I can find a quiet spot. I always ground. I have a grounding mat underneath. My friend Nick bought for me, my brother. And I put my feet on it all day while I'm in the office. Because look, I just shared a screen. This is just a smattering. I'm in my office is in the old Bell Labs building. It's called Bellworks now. And when I tell you there's frequencies all over this building, JCP&L has their headquarters here. So does, actually, they have the largest photo sensor windows on top of the building. Generates like 40% of the electric here, the biggest in the country. So you know they have smart meters all over the place. But there are so many businesses. NVIDIA is in here. Cisco's in here. And this is just a smattering. I count like 200 on average. This is just around my desk that's flying around this place. So why do I stay grounded, you know?
Yeah, and like we were talking about earlier, these studies that they do to, you know, they understand that there's health risks involved. In fact, I seen a clip on Twitter where this guy was actually pointing out one of the telecommunications companies or something. They had to let their investors know that their product was causing damage potentially, and they didn't know if it was going to have repercussions later as far as lawsuits, and they didn't have any insurance for it. So they let their investors know that. Well, so these people who put these devices up are aware. They're aware of the, and the studies, you know, when they did these controlled studies, they were very small, short studies with like one frequency at a time, very short periods of time. What you just showed us is we're getting hammered with all this stuff at once. And I don't know if it's intentional, but I really believe this is what's causing a lot of the to assist in the destabilization, because people are ready. They're like on edge to just go each other's throats right now, you know?
And like we were talking earlier before the show about standing waves, you know, wave propagation. Mm-hmm. You said you did radiation and stuff. What did you do?
No, I did a point-to-point microwave radio, which quickly became fiber optic, you know, when I was in, but yeah.
And I built the OC-192 rings for Nortel.
Okay, we had an OC-12.
Atlantic, so.
We had an OC-12.
Okay, yeah, I worked on everything from 1A, 5 ESS, all the way up to OC-192. But so when I used to see those guys go up on the poles, they'd say point blank, never get in front of those dishes. When you're doing line of sight and you're, you know, marking where the thing is, I don't know how you guys, you know, line it up and triangulate it. But they said you could be in front of that dish if it goes active. Like, you're getting hit with all those rads of microwave, I guess, right?
It's,
I
mean, what's the
output on those things?
It happened
to
me.
Do you feel a tingling and a buzzing and everything?
Yes.
Do you feel the heat?
Your skin gets really hot. I've told the story before, but I was working on a ground satellite receiver. And when I was in there, it has a radome to protect it from the weather. And it's supposed to be transparent to the waves, but there's a little bit of scatter, and just that little bit of scatter, you know. And then they have what's called topospheric scatter, which is where they point it up like you're shooting at a satellite, but you just crank it up, like cranking it all the way to the max. And some of it goes out into space or whatever, and some of it scatters down, and that's a way of getting around the curvature of the Earth with that you can't get with point to point because something's going to be obstructing you. So, and those, a lot of warnings on those. I've heard people have cooked hot dogs in front of them and they've popped popcorn in front of them.
I don't want to say I was a hacker or a freak or anything. I'm just saying that I played with certain devices and CBs and ham radios and shit like that. And we used to try to send signals, you know, like you said, bounce it off the ionosphere or low cloud cover, you know, summer you had to account for droop, and winter, you know, you can get those longer, you know, we could talk about this shit forever. But the way I was going to say is I remember I had a Nokia loaner phone because I was an early adopter. I had an old StarTAC Motorola back in 95. Okay. When I had this Nokia, my freaking hand was hot, numb, tingly. I couldn't feel anything. And I would hear it come through my radio, when the signal would come through. So, you know, what people don't realize is when you can't get a signal, your phone actually steps up its amplification. It puts out more wattage to try to hit that tower so you have something. Now, there's ways you can actually take down. If you're not using the internet and you just have to make an emergency call, you can drop it down to 3G or even 2G just to make that call. Now they're doing away with that. They want to do it all the 2G emergency channels, which it's the equivalent of the old 900 megahertz Panasonic phones that you could actually use 1500 feet away from your house and go driving to the store and pick up other people's, you know, phone service in their house. I mean, it was that good of a phone. Okay. So you get a free phone. The point I'm trying to make is if I can detect this in 2000 with a Nokia phone, and then I find out in Consumer Reports 2004 that that model phone they loaned me was causing the most amount of sarcomas and other kinds of, you know, brain tumors and shit like that, people holding it all day, I'm thinking, holy crap. Like how many people are utilizing this and thinking it's safe?
Yeah.
I wear wired headphones. I won't wear Bluetooth even. I know it sounds crazy. I'm not worried about the amperage. I'm worried about the signal. If they cross interfere two signals at different frequencies, it can make like a little Tesla howitzer in my brain. You know, who knows what they're colliding frequencies and stuff. There's so many things they can do to disrupt us. I know it sounds silly, but
was it Snowden? Snowden was the NSA whistleblower guy, right?
Yeah.
He exposed all this of what you're talking about, them being able to turn on listening and using a headset. And so he actually, with his devices, and this goes back to the monitoring, not so much the EMF, but he says, I've seen an interview he did, and he takes his smartphone apart when he gets it. He removes the microphone and he removes the camera. And if he wants to make a phone call, he uses a headset. Okay. And that does two things. Number one, it gets the EMF away from your head, but also it keeps them from being able to turn that stuff on remotely. We're getting way sidetracked on the EMF.
I'm sorry, man.
I thought that was kind of relevant because, as we talked about it before the show, we're looking at how can they get America to engage in a civil war or potentially just enough of a concern that the National Guard or martial law or something would have to be implemented. That's where I see this going. That's exactly where I see this going. And let's jump to there real quick, because this is what everybody's talking about right now. Well, let's take a look at this. We got this.
I apologize to your listeners, by the way. I'm sorry.
No, they love, we love this kind of stuff and they're pretty educated on it. So it's great to hear another angle on a lot of different topics. Let's take a look at this. So another division that they've driven between us is, this is what we have on the streets. Now this is a group of people flash mob to this 7-Eleven. I'm sure you've seen this. Okay, so we got this, and this goes back to the overall planning. These are in these areas you have, let me turn the volume down, people like these Soros appointed district attorneys that refuse to prosecute this stuff. So people have gotten bold. Now are they acting this way because of all the stuff they're exposed to? I mean, someone might say, well, it's been normalized because they're watching it on the internet or because of video games. You know, they're normalizing crime, things like Grand Theft Auto and stuff. But the point is that they're not doing
movies like The Purge, movies like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's been introduced to get us there, because, and that would be one thing if these people are just doing that. But take a look at the January 6th folks. Those people, I didn't see things spray painted. I didn't see, you know, I know there was some violence there. I've seen the footage. There was some violence, but nothing to that scale. But those people, they went out and found them and they put them in jail. A lot of them put in jail. So how can you tell me that you can't find some of these people? They could put up a geofence and tell exactly who was in that building at that exact time. that we know they can do it. We've seen the 2,000 mules. They did it when they did the documentary. That's how they tracked people. And they were able to purchase that data. They weren't even a government agency. They just purchased the data to find out where they had been. But anyway, my point is that when you have two standards like that, you're going to cause a lot of division in the nation. Again, going back to the MAGA folks or the far right folks and the people that think chaos is fine, they're setting it up to go to war. I mean, you got people saying, oh, someone should just take those people out back and shoot them. We need to bring back public hangings. That's the wrong answer. We can't go that route because that's what they want us to do. They're creating these problems that we ask for these solutions. And then the final bit, we're going to run over the hour and a half, but the final bit, and this is what I wanted to really get to. This is the big story of the day. Here's the migrants coming across.
Warning, tensions escalating on the Texas border. Dramatic new video shows a struggle between Border Patrol and migrants in El Paso. The video shows dozens of migrants pulling aside a razor wire fence, then pushing their way past a handful of Border Patrol agents. The migrants were eventually stopped a short time later by a steel fence, where border agents and Texas DPS contained the situation and processed the 400 to 600 migrants.
Okay, and the reason I bring that up is everybody, the different shows I watch and people I talk to, they're now, and they've been calling for this for a while, ever since this migrant thing. And you know, you're looking at, my friend Serge went down and checked out an area where they didn't, you know, they filmed all these people coming across. It turns out we were actually helping them. We were helping distribute them. The National Guard was helping distribute them throughout the nation. Okay. They weren't there to stop them. They were there to assist them. That's what we determined. But people are crossing all over the place. They just show you certain things to enrage the people. It's part of the Mockingbird media plan to enrage the people and get them to call for, oh, let's bring all the troops home and put them on the border. I think there's some real dangerous implications to that. What's your thoughts on it? Do you think that's a viable solution? Should we be? Because I think that's what they want us to call for. They've created the problem through incentivizing people to come here, through using NGOs to fund them to fly from, say, China, because we had thousands and thousands of young Chinese men come from China all the way up from, was it Venezuela or somewhere like that? They had a roadmap. They have pre-printed maps that show you the different routes you can take. And then, yeah, stop here and sleep for the night because they can speak Chinese. You know, this is where you want to eat. This is where you catch the bus. This is where you walk. This is where you can catch a plane flight. They have instructions. This is heavily funded. Who's funding it? And do you think this is created so that as a problem so that we will call for the solution of militarizing our own United States? I don't know. That's kind of what I'm seeing happen.
I know what you're saying, and I know the people and the stuff that I've studied and read that some of your listeners are I'm sure, are familiar with, like Bill Cooper, Behold a Pale Horse. And he talked about these things happening with UN conscripts and all this other stuff. I mean, for a time, the NAFTA superhighway was something they were pushing with their agenda. And I don't know if that's still in play. You know, this whole thing with an open border in Mexico, the original push for, you're familiar with the NAFTA superhighway, it was supposed to go from Mexico up to Kansas City and then spread out one towards Vancouver and one up towards Toronto. And, you know, it was all going to be militarized, train, transport, and everything else. And we were supposed to connect. There was a name for it with Canada, America, and Mexico all being one big, you know, sector, basically. Right, open borders, and we were just going to unite. So I don't know if that's still the agenda or in play or what's going on there, but I do know this. I just want to answer because you mentioned January 6th. If you have a peaceful protest of 100,000 people, let's say they're all patriots, good people again, very conservatives, whatever, and then CNN or somebody puts a plant in the middle of it, and they say, okay, now they give them the broadcast, and all you see in slow motion is this Molotov cocktail that the camera just happened to be perfect. Strictly focused on that part of the crowd, and it comes across and it hits a cop car, maybe a cop catches on fire, whatever. Point is that now those 100,000 people are labeled as what?
Terrorists. Insurrection.
Terrorists, right? Yep. Exactly. And people are just there like, you know, I'm just standing here, what are you talking about? January 6th was similar in scope, and you know, people have said and criticized Trump, how come he didn't pardon those guys that were arrested and things like that on January 6th? And I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe there were more plants than we realized that were orchestrating the whole thing. Because a lot of people said that they were let in and all this other stuff. And there was a controversy with the shooting, that woman that got shot and all that. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is, even some of the guys that got arrested, why would he pardon somebody who's part of the PSYOP?
Yeah, just an angle.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, does the ends justify the means? When they implement any of this stuff, we don't know their playbook. I think people make a critical mistake when they make fun of, you know, they say, oh, military intelligence is an oxymoron. The government is stupid. No, they have think tanks. They have tons of money. They're taking in data metrics that any advertising company, any sales company, or anything like that would love to buy their lists of what they have on us. Mm-hmm. They have all our passwords, everything we look at, from every craving for food to fetish or whatever you want to call it. They have a full dossier. Look, in the 70s, if you had said to the KGB, one day people will self-dossier themselves for you. They'll tell you who they're having sex with, what they eat for breakfast, what they're wearing. They'll show you a picture every time they grow a beard, change their appearance, or anything else. You won't have to do a frigging thing except be their friend on Facebook. The KGB would laugh at you and say, what are you, nuts? What are you talking about? Orwell couldn't have came up with this shit. So yeah, bringing troops back here, I think it just sets up for what's coming next. I mean, look, they only monitor, I think, 1.5 containers out of 200. So the guy gave us the statistics, 1.8 containers out of 200 coming through the border from, and Canada is really the problem, not so much Mexico.
But yeah, I've been hearing that they're coming through Canada now.
Yeah. I mean, there was an incident where supposedly like a small nuke or something went off. There was a Chinese base right on the other border of like right on Maine and Canada or something. Like, there was a big thing last year, and then that story got scrubbed. The point I'm trying to make is, who's to say the Chinese, with all the shit they sent from Alibaba, Temu, and Amazon, don't already have their gun parts here, their Jeep parts here, their tank parts here, just sitting, waiting in these freaking storage containers that we don't even know what the hell's in them. They got a lot of their people here, maybe working in Chinese food restaurants and everywhere else, right? Young, able-bodied people. And they blow the whistle. And one day, you know, Operation Fortune Cookie, you're sitting here eating egg roll and lo mein. Next thing you know, you have an AK-74 pointing in your face. We don't know how this is going to go down.
And that's the thing, is that those questions that are legitimate questions to ask, it doesn't even have to be.
These are hypotheticals. Just for entertainment purposes only. These are hypotheticals.
The thing is that it doesn't have to be necessarily true to accomplish the mission. And the mission is a false flag. So this is what I see, my hypothetical. We keep on the people who don't want to see martial law, the patriots, the far right people that want border control, all this stuff, are now begging for the military, for the active duty military, right, to come. And that takes an act of Congress for them to run operations on U.S. soil outside of the base, you know.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah.
Do you know what the difference between a freedom fighter and a terrorist is?
The label?
No, whether they're on the CIA's payroll or
not. Oh, there you go. No, but what the way I see this playing out is they've created a situation, this outer control border, which was incentivized and paid for. So, you know, it's part of some type of operation. It has to be. These people are getting phones, prepaid cards. They're getting bussed around for free. They're getting housed for free. And I'm not talking now, you know, you can hate me. I think my mouse went crazy on me. You know, I'm not anti-immigration. I'm not anti, you know, people want to come over here and work, fine. But these people are not coming over here. This new group that's coming are not coming here to work. Now they're all throughout the entire nation. Nobody knows where half these people are. Now we're calling to bring the troops home to be activated on the border. You know that there's going to be some kind of legislation that gives him the power to do that without having to continue to get congressional approval. Now, once that happens, you've set a precedent. And now going back to the NFA, okay? The NFA started an outcry of the people. They wanted to have these things off the streets, which didn't take them off the streets, by the way, because I did the math on it, and Al Capone's net worth when he died, he could have still legally purchased 32,000 Tommy guns, or they pay the tax.
Wait, when you're talking the NFA, you're talking the National Firearms
Act. National Firearms Act. Yeah. So the same way that they used that, and they broadened terms, they changed definitions, they added things to the list. What would happen if we had another act of some sort that allowed the military to operate under certain circumstances in an armed fashion within the U.S. How easy would it be just to have a bureaucracy start changing a few terms? And now, oh, we have a false flag and it's got to be the immigrants. So now we got to push off the border and go into the cities in a militaristic fashion, doing raids to find these. I mean, we wind up with martial law is what we wind up with. So that was the point of this whole thing, was to look at how they fractured America. They've got us to start calling for a solution to a problem they're creating. And at some point, I think that there's either going to be a threat of a civil war, and that's how the military will be used, or it's going to be a false flag. And if I was going to be a betting man, I would bet a false flag probably on our power infrastructure, because people will be calling for anything to get their smartphone back on, to be able to charge it. So, and then you can blame whoever you want. You can blame China. You can blame Iran. You can blame anybody you want, when it could just be a CIA operative with a couple things to C4 that takes out one of these massive things that ties two cities together, you know, because that causes a cascading effect, especially
if the power went out in this country for a mere 3 months, the landscape would look so different.
Yeah.
Forget Mad Max. I mean, the death rate would be so high. People that are dependent on medicine and everything else. Fat people like myself would look great. We would do well. We just sat there and did nothing and went fishing. You know what I'm saying? But everybody's not just going to go hunting for deer and shit like that in the woods. You know, people that know how to live off the land will. My point is that we will lose a lot of people, because a lot of people are infirmed, dependent on medications of all sorts, creature comforts. They don't know, you know, depending on the climate of where they live and what time of the year it is, you know, like in the dead of winter. We could lose a good 150 million people just in 3 months.
Oh yeah. And you got to understand too, that people don't have more than a couple of days of food in their house. And what they do have is probably in the freezer and will spoil if you can't turn your
even the idea, some people said, you know, there's not enough in this country. It's like, I think under 24 hours, it used to be like several days per person, you know, in America. But the point is that you have distribution channels. How are you going to distribute it? Our truckers, God bless them, are the backbone and blood of this country. They stop rolling. If they ever push the gas up above $6 a gallon or diesel, whatever, we're done.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, because everything will become much more expensive on top of inflation and shrinkflation. You're talking $10 for a loaf of bread, you know?
You see the shrinkflation in the store, you go to buy a package, you look at it, it's half air or it's,
yeah.
I went to buy water the other day for the store, little bottles. They don't even have the 12 ounce bottle. I had to buy like mini eights.
Wow.
You know, it's like, what the hell's going on? I'm getting scared. I'm not getting scared. I have no fear. I'm concerned for everybody else. Like, this is going to be devastating for some people.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. We didn't go too much over. And when I play this on Free World, it'll cut us off a little early. Maybe I'll cut my intros out to give a little more time. But anyway, final thoughts. Back to the main topic. I know there's some stuff I missed because the conversation is something like this goes where it goes, because it is such a broad topic and everything is so intertwined and there's so many pieces that you can't cover it in one setting. So it's a little bit tough to talk about. I think we did all right. What do you think?
No, I think we did. I mean, this is just an intro, you know, first time I'm broadcasting with you, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, any final thoughts on this whole thing?
I believe in God. I believe in people, and I have hope. I've seen what happens when, unfortunately, we go through the hardest times, World War II, 9/11, how peaceful everybody was. On they're kind of considerate. There was a modicum of respect and decency and people working along with each other for 2 weeks. It was almost like we were all in mourning, in shock of what happened. And then until, you know, Bush stood up there and said, everybody has to get out there and buy, the economy's hurting. Then everybody went back to their a-hole ways, like, you know.
Yeah.
But people were holding open doors, you know what I'm saying? So does this need to happen? No, I would hate to think that's what's necessary to bring us all together. But, you know, I've seen what we're capable of when we have to be. And I'm not giving up on life and society. I'm not cynical, you know. I leave it in God's hands. That's my position.
Well said. I guess my final thought is, you know, look at how we destabilized other nations. Be careful that we're, like you said, we need to work together. Don't let us be divided. You know, we understand we are one nation and we can have differing opinions, and the media is going to make those very polar things so that we call for either we fight about it or we call for solutions. That's what they want to do, is impose their solution.
But you know what? And you were more practical with your answer. I was a little bit too esoteric.
No, I like that. People need to know who you are. I mean,
No, but you make a good point, because I think it's good to be prudent and to be pragmatic and to prep and do everything you can do positive. Don't give any energy to the negative.
Yeah.
Because if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. We already know it's happening. So just be prepared. That's probably your best an ounce of prevention, you know, is worth a kind of thing. So I agree with you on that measure.
All right. Well, hey, once again, let everybody know what you do and where they can find you.
Tuesday and Thursday nights on freeworld.fm. It's 8 to 10 p.m. It used to be 7:30. 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the show is called Perceptions Talk Radio. I also have a YouTube channel with Perceptions Talk Radio. I'm going to be putting more media up on there. And, I would love to do this again sometime.
Yeah, sure. And I'll add you, stick around when we're done, because I got a web page that we put all our friends on, and I can put a link to your YouTube on there, so people can go see where to find your stuff. So, but anyway, I guess I'll wrap it up, and I want to thank Risha. Risha was in the chat. Freckles was in the chat. Angry Tiger, Karen Carpenter. And there was other people watching, but they didn't participate in the chat. Normally we have a lot of people in the chat, so it's kind of odd. Of course, I normally do this on a Thursday, so it's a day off. So they'll probably watch after the fact once they realize I had a show. So I guess that does it for tonight. Remember to hold your ground, watch the enemy, improve the foxhole, and always look out for one another. Until next time.
You've been watching The Foxhole with Jason Barker.